Good morning, welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Friday the 4th of September. My name's Nick here in Melbourne. Starting with the big Pilbara iron ore destroyer project, also known as the Simandou iron ore project in Guinea on the western coast of Africa. Now, there's been some new analysis reported in the AFR yesterday from commodity intelligence firm CRU, saying that the impact on iron ore prices of this project would be a maximum of US $8 per ton, which, you know, with prices well over 120 a ton, it is quite small. So in case you don't know, this project is one that's been sort of touted for a long time. There's some really high quality iron ore deposits in the nation of Guinea, and they're, you know, much higher than what we have in the Pilbara. And China has, you know, pledged to invest in that area. In the past, you know, it's been sort of wrought by the Ebola virus and a lot of political instability, so no projects have really got up, but China's really pushing for this. And, you know, it makes sense. They're very, very dependent on our iron ore exports. And interestingly, the AFR points out that Japan, which, you know, was the main iron ore consumer in the 1980s, they were quite instrumental in expanding the iron ore industry in Brazil for that same reason. They didn't want to be dependent just on Australian iron ore. So in terms of the sort of the impacts of this project, so Australia exports about 850 million tons of iron ore a year, which is, you know, well over half the total seaborne market. Now, they expect that this project, even in sort of most ambitious best case scenario, would be able to produce about 150 million tons a year. However, that will be very unlikely. You know, the CEO of Fortescue says she doesn't expect anything from that project within the next 5 years. The other problems with this site is it's a lot further to China from the west coast of Africa. So once again, Australia just seems to be, you know, gifted in that position. It's so close to China with such, you know, existing developed infrastructure ready to go. And, you know, most analysis sort of points to the fact that it would be more economical for Australia to replace, you know, our existing mines as they get depleted than to, you know, move into new emerging sort of countries where there's no infrastructure and having to build it all from scratch. So, you know, maybe it isn't quite yet time to call, you know, that Australia's sort of dominance is coming to an end. So also in the AFR yesterday, some interesting analysis on the Term Funding Facility, which is the $200 billion RBA facility offered to the big banks here in Australia, allowing them to borrow at low rates of 25 bips for up to 3 years. The Reserve Bank extended the availability of that through to the middle of next year, and also the amount available. Now, you know, the intention of that is to have the banks, or the banks have to, you know, use that money only if they're using it to lend out. But obviously that's sort of, you know, if money's money, and if they're using that money to lend, it does free up capital for other pursuits. And what the AFR is suggesting, that it could mean that the banks could buy 10-year Australian bonds and basically do an arbitrage on that, you know, profit from the higher yields on that. It's about 65 bips at the moment, so nothing to sneeze at. And the other implications of that will be obviously reducing the yields at the 10-year, which is very high for developed nations, one of the highest 10-year yield rates, partly because of, you know, the reluctance of the RBA to do quantitative easing. But also it will have the impact of potentially forcing down the Australian dollar, which, you know, a lot of forecasts are now at the sort of 75 to 80 US cents level. And that would, you know, make Australian bonds less appealing if the yield's lower, hence sort of forcing the currency down. So an interesting sort of analysis there. Touching on the topic of ESG investing again, now the FT mentions some issues regarding ESG bond investing or green bond investing. We mentioned yesterday that Germany's launched its first green bond, and they're launching a lot more. Now, one of the issues with sovereign bonds in this space is, the ESG funds assess the sort of the greenness and the appropriateness of these bonds, and what they're finding is the criteria is by implication favoring more developed nations. So, they're looking at things such as, social mobility, data on labor and markets, educational standards, levels of corruption, and this is, naturally tilting the favor towards more developed, countries that probably don't need access to this capital as much as the developing countries. So what they're suggesting is that maybe because of this strong correlation between positive ESG scores and per capita GDP, is that they should really look at sort of adjusting the ESG ratings based on the level of development of each country, which would sort of certainly mean that less well-governed, more corrupt, and more polluted countries, such as many developing countries, will actually be able to tap these important capital flows. Okay, it's been noted that to help Australia come out of the coronavirus crisis, and as the 7% GDP contraction this week, the RBA governor Philip Lowe has urged states to start, providing fiscal stimulus to the economy, and certainly, that's consistent with the message coming from the federal government. Now, as a comparison, the French national government has announced a 100 billion euro stimulus package and what they're going to spend it on. So they're spending about 30 billion euros, so 30% of that on environmental transitions, including 4.9 billion on the development of the hydrogen industry and other green technologies, 4.7 on the brilliant French railway network, and interestingly, 6.7 billion euro on improving insulation in homes and public buildings. I'm sure, there's certain people in the Rudd government there that are intrigued by that. Now, they've also mentioned 35 billion will go to improving industrial competitiveness and innovation, and 20 billion in reduced production taxes for industry over 2 years, and 1 billion to help reshoring of strategic industries such as health and IT, and then 35 billion on social and regional cohesion, including employment projects and skills training for the young. So that will sort of help public sector debt in France increase to about 120% of GDP from about the 100% it was at before the pandemic. And just as reference, Australia's was around 42% before the pandemic. And moving to the markets now in the US, Bloomberg's reporting that US federal health officials have alerted the states to be prepared for the deployment of a vaccine on the 1st of November, which is a very ambitious schedule, but it does mean that it would be being deployed just before the federal election there, which, would obviously make a bit of sense for Donald Trump. Now, in terms of the rest of the market, there is a real correction in the NASDAQ. About an hour after open, it's down, almost 3.3%, much more than the small cap end of the market, and the Russell's down only about 1.5%. Now, coming up today in Australia, we have the retail sales for August coming out, and the Sydney Futures Index is down about 70 bips. That's your update for Friday. Have a great day today and see you soon.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.